T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, here we go into a Wednesday edition of Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Steven Serta with you. Back to just the normal intro and then just randomness. It's not quite as crazy. I don't know. Ryan's back in the building. Maybe he got that stuff fixed. Ryan, we had some bizarre like jazz country / porn music bumping us in throughout the last couple of days.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're back and it's fixed.
It really went from 90s sitcom to like Saturday Night Fever to it ran the gamut, but I liked it. Yeah. I kind of liked it.
This is back to the standard stuff here. We'll talk some Royals baseball in about 12 minutes. Royals winning streak snapped last night, but still plenty of positives to take out of it. And Royals pitcher Josh Staumont going to join us at 10:45. You don't want to miss that. 10:45, you'll hear from Josh Staumont going to join us live here on Cody and Gold. But we do start what continues to be the biggest story in sports, and it is conference is deciding whether or not to play football in the fall. Two conferences, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, have thrown in the towel for the fall football season. They're going to try to play in the spring. That would be, of course, the Big Ten and the Pac-12. And there are still three conferences out there, including the Big 12 and the SEC, that are moving forward with a fall football season. And the expectation is around 11 o'clock today, Bob Bowlsby of the Big 12 commissioner, he's going to announce their revised schedule. And that revised schedule is going to include a start date that aligns with the SEC, which is September the 26th. But there's two conferences are done. Three are continuing to highlight the issue, I think, with the lack of leadership in college football. You have medical advice that's been put out there. You have the Pac-12, who at least I'll give them credit, said why they believe this was the right move. The Big Ten just said, hey, we're canceling this whole thing, and they didn't provide any information to go along with it. At least the Pac-12 said, hey, we need better testing capacity. We need to make sure that the testing is there and the numbers in our Pac-12 footprint are lower and all this. At least they gave some reasoning behind that. We didn't hear that from the Big Ten. And you would think if the medical advice, the health information that the medical doctors have provided these conferences, if it was out there, wouldn't they just share that with all the other conferences, and then wouldn't they all be making the uniform decision? That would be just too easy to do one way or the other. Instead, we've got two conferences, Cody, that have made a decision.
You don't even have people inside their own conferences agreeing. So yeah, where are we now?
There's no leadership whatsoever in college football. None. Each conference makes the decisions on their own, unless now we're seeing three grouping together. And so that's why we sit here where South Carolina is talking still about having fans in the stands. Meanwhile, two conferences don't feel like they can even play football.
It's the problem. And yes, obviously, they're getting the same information because the Big 12 is set to announce today increased testing based on that same information that people just chose to cancel over. So obviously, they think at this time that it's still safe to play. And my guess is they just went along with it because they thought it was plausible enough. And the SEC said, to hell with it. They're going to do it. So maybe that was just as simple as, let's continue this forward. But the idea, I don't think that this means college football is definitely going to happen, right? Like, how in what world and what universe am I supposed to just be like, okay, yep, good to go? Because they're said to have built-in contingencies to push the schedule back even later, but they are all lining up in a row to handle it. And honestly, I'm a little surprised any college athletic program would cancel it this soon. I'm just not surprised that it would go away. The seemingly difference here is that the SEC, Greg Sankey last night was just like, I don't know what their problem is. We feel like it's fine. And then Kevin Warren, who's the new commissioner of the Big 12 last night, He was a little more bullish on the fact that it just simply wasn't safe for anybody.
Now, here's what Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren did say about the unknowns that are out there.
There's too much uncertainty. We have a lot of uncertainty going on now. And even questions that we ask and still ask. And it doesn't mean that we're giving up forever. I mean, this is really our continuation of work and an evolution. We're going to continually have to gather information and look forward to the future. But there's so much uncertainty. And as we, you know, asked questions 2 weeks ago, some questions were answered, but then you ask more questions and then maybe those questions are answered, but then there's new questions. And then you ask questions even today. And it's not only in the Big Ten, I think just across the country and in the world, there is so much uncertainty about this virus. This is a novel virus. It is spreading at alarming rates. I believe there's over 5 million people worldwide and 160,000 deaths that have occurred. This is a serious virus.
So that's Kevin Warren of the Big Ten. And I think when you hear that from him, the unknowns that are out there, still people want to know, okay, what specifically needs to happen, though, for you to have a chance
to play in 3 months after that or 4 months after that?
Yeah, because like, that's okay. What's going to be different?
It's just the two of them. They're not going to play. They are, but it's going to be an incredibly limited schedule that doesn't mean anything.
I don't think so, but at the same time, the Pac-12 is out here at least providing some information. That was my biggest issue with the Big Ten yesterday, was they did not give really any reasoning specific to why they were doing it. Now, there's the reports about some of the new medical information that talks about the health issues, specifically the heart issue and the inflamed heart that they're now maybe learning more about, and that's the risk involved. Now, I still think it comes down more to liability and the concerns of lawsuits, but still, I come back
to them
like,
why is it
okay for three of the conferences and the other two don't think it's reasonable? Now, maybe it's the end result might be the same a month from now, Cody. A month from now or over a month from now, the end result might be the same. We might be sitting here in the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC might end up having the exact same end result, which is postponing a season to the spring. That could very likely happen, but the difference, they're at least trying to send a message, and I think it wins over some fans right now. It wins over your players within your universities and the student athletes that are trying to play football and further their careers and why they're attending that university. Let's be real, they're there for to play football, at least when we're talking about this sport, and they are getting more of a shot from their leaders in their conference than the Big Ten and the Pac-12. The end result might be the same, but they can at least say, "Hey, we're trying. We're willing to push back the start of this season." They're seemingly giving more of an effort to make this possible. Doesn't mean they will have it go through, but they're trying harder. That's the perception and what appears to be the case. And that's why I think we're seeing the difference in the announcements as well.
I just assume it's different medical opinions, whether that seems like a simple explanation or not. Doctors can disagree on if it's safe or not. Hell, even some doctors seemingly waver on whether or not it's plausible to play certain sports depending on certain circumstances. And maybe just the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC are willing to take further medical steps than the other ones. Like Big Ten's looking at it and they're like, this looks like a lot of work and it's going to take everything going perfectly in order for this to happen. And those other conferences are like, we're willing to take that chance. We're willing to increase testing, put in those protocols, give it a shot. But that's like the reason why those things vary, the same reason it varies per school district. Some of it is financial based, but some of it is just different medical professionals or different people in charge taking information from medical professionals, meaning differently. Because it's reported that the Pac-12, the second they saw those heart reports,
yep,
the things we talked about yesterday for certain heart conditions that already exist inside of their conference and what it could do to them, they're like, ooh, we're out. Thanks. Big 12 reportedly seen the same things. They're just going to increase their testing for those things. And you could choose, right? If you have kids who test positive for those heart conditions, you could just say, hey, we're sorry, but this is not the year you get to play Big 12 football. Like, we want to keep you safe, which means you can't play with that condition for our team. You could just eliminate the people who are at greater risk as a result of that. Now, you can't eliminate everybody's at greater risk because offensive linemen exist and people with other underlying medical conditions exist. But if they're working on the same information, you can make those decisions how you want. And to be honest, if you play college football before, the Big Ten, Big 12, and ACC eliminate any importance on spring football. Like, it doesn't matter if I just watch the entire college football season get played 3/5. But after what? The Big Sky canceled today? I mean, we're down to like 50 teams who are going to play college football this year, or damn near close to it. So, I mean, the number...
Yeah, but I don't think that, like, as far as the interest, like, both ways, both in the fall, if we end up with only two conferences playing football in the fall, and they, whether they get four games in or three, and they end up getting four games in, or they get six games in, or more than that, like, people are absolutely watching. It's not going to matter, oh, there's not enough teams that
are playing. No, they'll watch it,
in the spring, same deal. If we found out that it truly is going to be spring football with the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and that's it, people are absolutely going to watch. It's still football. It's college football. Even if the top tier, the projected first round pick at a Big Ten school isn't going to play in the spring, people will still be starved for football. Even if it happens a week or two after the Super Bowl, heck, the ratings at times for the XFL weren't
Saturday,
that bad.
Might start at the Saturday of the Pro Bowl, and then play the Saturday before the
Either
Super
works.
Bowl, and then cruise on the rest of the way. I'm not saying people won't watch it, and I don't care about it. How are they going to decide a champion? You know how long college football has been bad at that decision-making process? Like, a really long time. People aren't even satisfied with their current method of deciding the champion because it only includes four teams. So don't feel bad. There's teams that have like, there's like in the 1930s, there's like four teams who claim they're national champions right now. So don't worry about them not deciding a champion correctly, because they're really terrible at it already.
And then you have Lou Holtz.
Oh, boy.
I think they should play, but then again, that's my thing. I think that you ought to say to the players, you want to play if you have a problem, if you have an asthma problem, if you're diabetic or something, and you have a legitimate reason you don't want to play, absolutely, don't play. The rest of you want to play, let's go play. I think that we shut everything down for 6 months. I'm going crazy about being quarantined. I think other people are tired of it. Let's move on with our life. When they stormed Normandy, they knew that there were going to be casualties. There's going to be risk. 2% of the people that can they go to the emergency room go for COVID-19. 2% of it is going down. But young people, Bill, they think it's like cancer. They think they're going to die.
That was Lou Holtz on Fox News trying to compare those
Normandy.
That lost their lives on the beaches of Normandy to those not playing college football. Because, fighting for your country and also like, dang it, I got to get my entertainment is the exact same thing. Lou Holtz. By the way, second time in the last 30 days he's pushed that same narrative.
Lou Holtz is 83 years old. He looks like he's pushing 100.
He is up there.
But he's sick of being quarantined, Serta. Why won't people just storm Normandy?
We're quarantining to protect people like you, Lou.
Lou Holtz just spitting all over the TV as he was talking to us.
I gotta be honest. Can we, like, there's a couple of things I'm just gonna give people some general advice. I would avoid comparing things to. And I would avoid the comparison between college football and storming Normandy. Normandy. That's a bit of a stretch, Lou.
Yes.
All right? It's a bit of a stretch. You might want to dial it back a couple of notches in your comparison game, because I feel like, I got to be honest, I feel like...
Like, what's amazing to me is a month ago he said the same thing, and the reaction, shockingly, was the same. And then he decided to fire it back up 30 days later. Like, he believes it. He thinks it's a great comparison. This is twice. This wasn't just like a one-time thing. You're right, that was a mistake of mine. This is twice in 30 days that he's used the same comparison.
Yeah, could he at least
trying
go,
to
like,
correlate the two?
Could he at least mix up his analogies of war? Like, couldn't he be like Teddy Roosevelt going up, Santa Anita? Like, can he at least like give me something else?
That's what he's
Either
got.
Way,
That's
please
what he's
just
got.
Don't make those comparisons, because this is a completely voluntary sport.
Yes, and it's entertainment.
No worldly change to any of it. So. Like, I just don't understand, Lou. Lou's an insane person. That's really the short of it.
So that's what's going on with college football right now. We will talk more about the feasibility of a spring season and also the impact on the National Football League, if any. What does the NFL do with these announcements if there is spring football? We'll get to that coming up at 11 o'clock. And don't forget, here in about 30 minutes at 10:45, Royals pitcher Josh Domont going to join us live here on the show. And the Royals, they did see their winning streak come to an end yesterday in their loss to the Reds 6-5. And they're down 5-1, and that's... the way they did battle back, and I know it's a loss, and you say either way, no matter how you go about it, it still shows up as a loss. And in a 60-game season, each loss is very impactful. And is this the loss that's going to come back to bite you and all that kind of stuff? No question. It was a tough loss because the Royals outplayed the Reds. I understand one team won, one team lost, the Royals lost, but the Royals outplayed the Reds last night. They were down 5-1. They battled back. They had multiple opportunities throughout. Yes, 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position, and they left 10 on base. But they easily, as we've seen a couple times this year, they foul down early. They very easily could have let it get out of hand and kind of quit. We certainly have not seen that. Last night was no different. And based off of what you saw from the bullpen, again, we were having a discussion like what you trust more on this team. On the offense, so you had trust for them to bounce back after being down 5-1, but also the pitching staff. The bullpen, yet again, was fantastic last night. You had some bad luck go your way throughout the game, and certainly, yeah, the ending of that one, you can talk about, should have been a catch from Brett Phillips. Yes, absolutely, should be a ball that he has to catch in that scenario. It was a missed opportunity for the Royals last night, but you still feel good coming out of it, at least I do, because they were down 5-1 and found a way to battle back, and you still saw like some positives within that lineup as well. You know, like McBroom and O'Hearn both, and specifically McBroom on a pinch hit to come off the bench and to hit a two-run homer to tie the game up. I there were plenty of positives that came out of the game.
I think that, and that's obviously, there's positives that come out of that, but they played well. That's all we were asking for the Royals to do. They're going to lose some games. They weren't going to just win 10 in a row going in there. They played well enough. They didn't kick the ball around like the Reds. They gave up some homers. And if there's one thing, like, I have growing confidence in Mike Matheny every day. And we've had this discussion, like when at first of the hire, I was uninspired, but that didn't mean I was against it. I was just like, all right, sure. And I wanted proof that Mike Matheny was going to change some of the things he said he was going to change. And some of the things I wanted in a new manager for the Royals. And every day he seemingly proves a point that he is going to be the guy who does that. And one of those examples is just leaving in Chris Bubich last night long enough to deal with some of the trouble. He got mad on the mound after a homer went out. Matheny went out and talked to him. Looked like a pretty stern talk, truthfully. And then left him in the game the rest of the way to close out the final 7 or 8 batters before getting out after 5 innings and 5 runs. No, you do not feel good about the fact that he gave up a couple home runs, although that first one,
that ballpark, too.
I mean, the second one was gone. It's fine. It was probably gone in Kauffman. And he left the pitch up, which in the one place you don't want to leave a pitch up, in a bad spot, that even that first home run, he left it a bad spot. Like, that was the case. So, and that's just the position we're in. We got to figure out whether or not he's going to continue to do those things. And to this point, he has so far. That's a frustrating loss, just like anyone. And they all feel kind of big right now, Gold. But I liked the way I watched Bubich battle through that. And I liked that they left Matheny. They let Matheny, or Matheny let him, sorry, you know, battle through those things and do it. But a lot of their same problems that stoked the fire of bad offense in the early going are what happened last night. Really bad at bats in really key positions. Like Mondesi's still free swinging. Salvi's still deciding to swing at pitches before he even knows they're coming. And then just some, and then there's some untimely stuff. Like that was a nice play on Ryan O'Hearn to keep the run from scoring. So those things will bite you too, but just so many stranded runners throughout the game where it feels like that's a game you're supposed to win. And then Phillips misplays the one in center and you just kind of like, it was a snowbally game, the kinds that cost him games early. So it's a frustrating one, but they get the win against Cincinnati tonight. I'm not going to feel that down on it yet.
No, and tonight, you know, you need to make sure you can get it. You need to make sure you can get a split, and so then you get the next off day, and you head up to Minneapolis to take on the Twins, a team that you know you can beat. You just came off a sweep with them, and yeah, this last night was a very winnable game for the Royals, one that they absolutely should have had, and it was nice to see Chris Bubich, who had the 5 runs and then 75 pitches in 3 innings. All of a sudden, he goes and retires his final 7 and struck out 4 of them along the way and gives you 100 pitches and 5 innings of work. And considering the deep ball that he was giving up earlier, the deep balls he was giving up earlier on in the ballgame. So, yeah, you get back out there tonight. Of course, another early first pitch here, 5:30 or so on 610 Sports Radio. And then they get an off day. And we just saw also looks like Mike Matheny announced that Junis will start Friday. So everybody's going to get an extra, the starters that is, are going to get an extra off day in that. So Junis will be the starter on Friday. And I think also just going forward off of last night, one of the biggest positive in the lineup, while you might be disappointed to see Mondesi maybe in his at bat, to see O'Hearn's approach at the plate and come up a couple times, and then McBroom right away. And that gets back to like pushing the right buttons right now. It does seem like,
yeah, he's pinch hitting way more than normal.
Yeah, and he made Mike Matheny look like a genius last night. He pinch hits and he comes in, and Gordon struggled at the plate for a good chunk of this season so far. And you take a cool hitter and you bring in McBroom, and he goes and goes yard and puts you right back in the game, ties the game up. Disappointed they weren't able to get the win. There was some exciting news too, though, before the game. Now, what does it mean for this year? I don't think it means a whole lot, but Asa Lacy added to the 60-man roster, so he'll be part of that alternate campsite now. Instead of doing his own workouts on his own, he now gets to be part of an organized workouts over something that J.J. Piccolo is supervising at T-Bones Park. So Asa Lacy, of course, the Royals' top pick from just a few months ago, added to the 60-man roster. I don't think it means anything for 2020, but the fact that he's now going to be part of organized activities within the organization more so with everybody else, it makes you feel better maybe about just his eventual timeline in terms of next year or the year after. I'm not going to get excited about like, oh, this means that there's a chance he's on the roster this year as far as the actual open, 30-man or 28-man roster. No, I don't believe that's it. But it was exciting. I think people saw the name Asa Lacy added to the roster and your ears perk up a little bit.
I'm not going to ignore it. Carlos Hernandez, by the way, is a top 20 prospect in their system, too, I might add. So another name you could see this year. I don't put it at a very high percentage that we would see him this year because it doesn't really make sense. It never really seemed like it was in their plan. He had just gotten in the system. This isn't like the Brandon Finnegan year, which is about the time he got called up. He got added to the 40.
Yeah, it was in the College World Series and then ended up.
But, that was a World Series run year. It's all very different than that. But I wouldn't put it at zero because I didn't think Jason Guzman was going to get added to the 40-man roster. Yeah,
different roles, though, man. Like, one's a pitcher and one potentially is going to be a fill-in or a pinch runner or whatever, talking about Guzman, if what kind of role he might have. One, you would be talking about bringing in as a bullpen guy, most likely, if you were talking about Asa Lacy at this point in time. And I don't see, especially
maybe,
with the
but
way
maybe one more pitcher, and I get it. The other guys you would think that would get a call before him, right? Like Kohler or others.
I mean, I would think Matt Harvey would get an opportunity this year before Asa Lacy would.
I'd so much rather see Asa Lacy.
Yeah, of course I would rather see him. I'm just saying realistically, though, what's more likely? Probably the Matt Harvey, who they signed to a minor league deal, versus a guy that, is it pushing the timeline a little too early in their mind?
The optimist point of view would tell you that this is telling you that they're taking his possibility in 2020 or 2021 very seriously. And I know you're saying Jason Guzman, you're like, okay, well, he's a fast guy who can run. He's replacing essentially Nick Heath on a roster. But it's like they don't have other guys who could possibly just run off the bench on there, and they called up the 20-year-old. To me, that is either, you got to take those indications. We'll talk to Josh Vernier coming up at 12:30, so we can ask him why that would be the case as well. But, I think that it's probably a great sign for 2021. I don't think I put it at a pretty low odds for 2020. I'm just not going to completely rule it out just based on the fact that they've surprised me once before and I wouldn't say it. But any guy they put on the 60-man, I think they view as being a potential roster guy for them in the next 18 months. That or they're trying to get a much better look at them. Like Jason Guzman is blocked by Bobby Witt Jr., blocked by Adalberto Mondesi, blocked by Nicky Lopez. Like he's a middle infielder mostly by trade who hasn't hit for power or hasn't, the power hasn't fully realized yet and hasn't hit for average to this point. So they're trying to get a sense of it. I think with Asa Lacy, they just want to know where he is right now after working away from the facility for all this time.
Royals pitcher Josh Staumont going to join us at 10:45. Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, who do you want long-term? And the NBA bubble just got a lot more interesting with an announcement from the league.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Back here on Cody and Gold. So the Big 12 just put out their latest update for fall sports. Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the conference, in his statement, quote, "Ultimately, our student athletes have indicated their desire to compete in the sports they love this season, and it is up to all of us to deliver a safe, medically sound, and structured academic and athletic environment for accomplishing that outcome." From Bob Bowlsby of the Big 12. Also learning a little bit more about where the medical enhanced protocols are going to come from, what those would include. The Athletic reporting now 3 tests per week in high contact sports. Obviously football would be included in that. And then return to play protocols that weren't in place before. If you have a positive occurrence, it'll include EKGs, blood testing, echocardiograms, and cardiac MRI. So stuff that wasn't in place, that's their response to some of the new information they've learned. Again, they're Big 12, the difference between the Big 12 and with the SEC and the ACC is
they're deciding to make it work.
They are going through every avenue possible to make it work, and it seems like the Big 10 and the Pac 12 were not willing to do that. The end result could be the same, but that seems like where we are at. We'll talk more about this coming up at 11 o'clock and still expecting to have Josh Dahmon join us at 10:45 from the Royals. And thinking of relievers in the Royals organization right now, we know this bullpen has been fantastic, but between that group of Holland, Rosenthal, and Kennedy, all guys that are 1 year left, 1 year deals at this point in time on their contracts, who do you actually want longer term, and who feel comfortable about signing to a long term deal? You guys can let us know over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line 913-576-7610. For me, yeah, you can say Trevor Rosenthal because he's 30 years old. So you're like, okay, naturally, you sign someone like him to a 3 or 4 year deal. He's still only 33. Greg Holland is already 34. Now, I don't know what the financial figures would require on
that. We're talking like 2 additional years. Like if you're looking to lock him up now, I mean, it'd be cheaper to have Holland, wouldn't it?
That's why I probably lean more that way. Holland on another 1 year deal. He would be 35 at the end of another season. He's 34 right now. I don't have a whole lot of interest in signing Ian Kennedy long term. It's really whether Rosenthal and Holland, and actually both of them, to answer the question really is I would rather be able to sign both of them if the price fit. 1 year deal for Holland and Rosenthal, maybe it's a 2 year deal. Rosenthal's just attractive because it's the age, right? He's 30 years old compared to a 34 year old.
Yes, but he's also going to attract more in the trade market. And that's where I have difficulty deciding it. Like if we're just saying simply based on pitching, it's Rosenthal. That's the answer. He's younger. He's been more dominant more recently, let's say, than Greg Holland has, although it had been a couple of years since he was a viable reliever, like back to 2017, since he was a viable reliever. He didn't pitch in 2018, and he got shelled in 2019. So it's been a few years, and it's been really since 2015 since he was a dominant reliever. So we are going back to the last time Greg Holland was a dominant reliever was like around that time, right? When he got hurt, 14, 15, that was around the time Greg Holland. But he's 4 years younger. So the answer to me, if it's just pitching, is obviously Rosenthal. But there are factors at play here if you were saying, hey, we want to keep our bullpen together and we want one more veteran guy to go forward with into the following years. I don't think you can go with Ian Kennedy at this point because he's even shifted down. It's not like they don't use him in important situations. They use him in an important situation last night. But it seems to me that Matheny maybe has four arms he'd go to. Game 7 tonight of the World Series and they needed 12 outs, I'm pretty sure he'd put in Stammont. And I get it, like maybe not in that high pressure, but like Stammont, Rosenthal,
Barlow.
I mean, he's Zuber in a similar situation as he did Kennedy last night. Obviously, I think he'd use Kennedy in that situation. But there's a few names that would come above it. For me, the most attractive thing about Rosenthal is he can be the linchpin to the rest while you make sure the rest of the names are going to remain consistent. Rosenthal looks unhittable. And this isn't that like, hey, give the guys a veteran to do with it. It's the Royals bullpen right now is good. But Ian Kennedy, Rosenthal, and Holland are all on 1 year deals for this year, and they're not going to be gone. And the rest of the names are a bunch of guys who I think could work as bullpen guys, but we have no evidence that they could do it in the long haul. Like Zimmer's been great for the first time in his entire major league career. Stammont's been tremendous for the first time in his major league. You know, like he was fine last year, but now he's dominating. But he's got like 50 innings, like less than that, right? Zuber, rookie. Newberry's got a limited exposure. Maybe we've seen him a little bit. I've told you I was a little bit higher on Barlow, and we got a little more evidence that he can be a consistent. But for the most part, they don't have enough evidence on any of these guys to really know whether or not that's going to hold. And so for me, it's like the one stable guy's like, I'm pretty sure Rosenthal's going to be good next year. I'm pretty sure Rosenthal's going to be good the year after that, even though bullpen arms are notoriously kind of fickle. So I know that, but I would still I would just lean towards Rosenthal because I feel like I want one guy who has done it a lot in this league. And he's like him and Holland are the two guys you could say that about. And I'd rather just roll the dice, I guess, at this point, even though I love Holland.
I mean, the same way you said about the trade market, though, with Rosenthal, that also means if the season goes well for Rosenthal, continues pitching the way he has, then in the offseason, too, there's going to be far more suitors. And you're talking about potentially where contenders are at, what's the financial stake that a team is willing to put into it as well. So maybe it just naturally makes it more complicated to be able to have Rosenthal in a longer-term situation. Also, let's hope that if the Royals are still around 500 and still in this thing as we get into the final couple weeks of this month toward that trade deadline, which is, what, like August 29th, August 30th-ish, something like that. You know, at that point, if the Royals are still 500 or two games under 500 and therefore still within a game of a playoff spot or a half a game of a playoff spot, then at that point, the trade thing, you throw that out the window. Like, I'm not trading. You're not trading any of these guys at that point in time. Of course not. If you're the Royals and you're within a spot of the playoffs, yeah, at the trade deadline, you're not trading away anybody. Now, I'm not necessarily advocating that I would want to go be aggressive and trade for anyone either. I think you kind of just stand pat and sit where you're at. Let's hope that's the situation they're in, because that means the Royals have found ways to stay kind of right where, you know, within two, three games of 500 and stay in the hunt and see what can happen, create some magic.
Fine, but, you know, the reality is still, it's going to be so hard to make those decisions. You have to make those decisions in like 2 weeks.
Well, there'll be 30 games. I mean, they'll be halfway through the season. We're almost there, man. We're almost halfway through the season. We're two and a half weeks away.
3-10, you would have probably talked to me different. Now it's 7-11. Yeah. I feel a little bit different depending on how
going into this weekend series, no matter what happens tonight, but going into the Friday series with the Twins, the same thing as last Friday, where we were all at with that. And then you come out of that weekend, because each weekend can shift your season so dramatically in a 60-game slate. You come back on Monday, and good or bad, your season drastically changes. Like, they can win tonight, and they split with the Reds. They go into the weekend against the Twins. They get swept. Or if they sweep the Twins this time around again,
then you're serious.
Then you're in big-time business.
It's crazy that the next week, like, this is legitimately what we could be talking about, is that in the next week, we're deciding if the Royals are playoff contenders. That's how quickly it happens, right? That's how quickly it happens. Just that quick. By the way, the Big 12 schedule is officially out. Dennis Dodd posted a photo of that. If you're curious where the local schools start, looks like, and it's, the report is they'll have one non-con game, either what, the 12th or the 18th? The 12th or the 19th, the weeks before that?
Yep.
But the actual Big 12, just against the Big 12, schedule's out. Kansas takes on Baylor, Oklahoma State, then has a bye. West Virginia, K-State, Iowa State, Oklahoma, bye. Then Texas, TCU, and Tech, with the schedule ending on the 5th. Everybody's got a couple of built-in byes, presumably, so that you can move the schedule around. Poor K-State opens Oklahoma, Texas Tech, TCU before a quick break. Kansas, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, and then Iowa State, Baylor, Texas to finish things out. So the entire full slate is out. If you want to check out Dennis Dodd's Twitter account, you can see the full slate. But the Big 12 has put out their schedule. The Big 12 championship game would be either the 12th or the 19th based on that schedule.
Now, 12th or 19th of December. I mean, they're moving forward with this, as we expected to be the announcement today, based off of where, you know, based off where the leagues had positioned themselves, and the announcements from the Big 10 and the Pac-12 to not play. This is still, for me, like, okay, let's wait for kickoff.
Big Ten just gave me the 10+1 scheduling plan like a week ago, and now it's canceled. So, well, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, because it's the Big Ten that did their schedule. So it's like the schedule doesn't mean anything at this point. Like, I'm excited to see that the Big 12 and the ACC and the SEC appear to be moving full steam ahead, and September 26th will be their conference games and the non-conference. I mean, that's what I want. We all want college football. Like, yesterday stunk. Yesterday was a crappy day. Big 10 canceled their football season. The Pac-12 canceled it. We learned that the Pac-12 for basketball might not start until January. Not quite as upset about that as the football news, but still. Like, yeah, yesterday stunk when it comes to the sports world and some news that we got. Today, this is more optimistic. This is good. But let's still wait a month from now. Do the kickoffs actually happen? I'm all about giving it a shot. But this doesn't mean that the season is actually happening, though. They're just willing to put more effort into it than the other conferences. And for that, I do applaud the Big 12 and the ACC and the SEC. The Big 10 and the Pac-12 are like, we don't even want to deal with it. We don't even want to give a good effort anymore. We're just done. Now, the end result can be the same, but at least I'm seeing some try out of the conferences. and showing to the student athletes that have worked very hard that we're going to try to make this work. We can't guarantee it's going to work. We are going to try to make this a safe environment, but also not quit on you guys yet.
Yeah, but dial it back a little. I mean,
no,
they're not,
I mean, that's, Cody, they're not, that's what's
they're
happening.
Not just doing it for the guys. It's not just we're doing it for you.
No, but that's
this
the message, Cody. That's the message it sends, though, and that's why when they ultimately end up
for the money,
when they ultimately may have to cancel the season in September, you're not going to see the backlash towards the Big 12, the SEC, or the ACC the same way we saw the criticism that the Big 10 and the Pac-12 have faced.
But they're not.
It's not going to happen.
You're
1,000%
right. Public relations wise, 1,000%, they will go much, much easier on them, but it doesn't change the fact that they're not doing it for the players, they're doing it for the money.
Of course. Well, isn't that a given at this point? Like, I mean, that's college sports.
But you're saying from public perception wise, it'll come out that it'll look that way going forward. I mean, they're doing everything they can, right? They're going to do heart screenings. They're doing 3 COVID tests per week. They have EKGs. They have, you know, like non-con opponents have to do the same testing standards week of game. They're doing everything they can to try to make football happen, which I can appreciate because I want football to happen. But yeah, it is still about the money. They're lucky that they weren't the ones who got out ahead of it. Pac-12 and Big Ten are just being more cautious. And that's what an optimist would say. They're like, well, we're taking the cautious approach down with football. And I think they just assumed everyone was going to do that too. I think that was a tough reality wake-up call for the Big Ten. They're like, oh, hey, what the hell? I thought we all weren't going to play football right now because it's like super dangerous. Mm-mm.
But go
nope,
back.
Nope, sorry. We're going to keep trying to push through to get our regular schedule in, which is fine. I don't blame the Big 12 or the SEC for trying to make those things happen.
If we go back even 2 months ago when we were having discussions of like, all right, how is this all going to play out? I think all three of us would have said, which league is most likely to wait till the last minute to cancel?
SEC.
The SEC, right?
Yeah.
So the SEC, this should not surprise a soul that the SEC is going to wait and give this a go for September 26th for their conference openers. Maybe you're surprised that the Big 12 is attaching themselves to the, you know, to the SEC, or the Big 12 is attaching themselves to the ACC and joining up with them. That might be a bigger surprise, but the SEC, to me, their decision, if they came out in front and canceled, we would have seen everybody else fall in line, right? Like, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 aren't influencing the SEC. The SEC can influence everybody else.
Absolutely.
And so that's the difference.
Know the Big 10 and the Pac-12 are going down anyway. If the SEC decided not to play football today, goodbye, Big 12.
I'm talking about even a week ago.
Goodbye,
though. About a week ago, if the SEC would have said, yeah, we don't feel comfortable playing, everybody would have said, well, the SEC doesn't even think it's possible to play college football. Everybody else would have fallen in line. The Big 10 and the Pac-12, not clearly impacting the Big 12, the decision-making of the Big 12 and these other conferences. Other than the positive out of the cancellations, if there's any, yesterday was, well, it caused maybe the Big 12 with their medical alterations today and protocols to step it up a notch. And certainly what they've mentioned, there's more financial cost by them doing additional testing. There's more financial cost by them going through and having EKGs and all this stuff. Now, we know by playing a season, there's a huge financial benefit as well, even without fans, even if there's no fans. And yet there's still schools that in the SEC think they have a chance to. They think they have a chance to have fans. I mean, the SEC athletic director, I keep going back, that's still amazing to me. When we see these leagues canceling and then there's an athletic director, just shows you the disparity between the leagues, where there's one conference's school member and multiple school members talking about fans, and the other one's like, we can't even play. Like, that's what's amazing. How is it that much different from one conference to the other? And I guess that's just the makeup of everywhere. Like,
And how to interpret that data from medical experts and how presidents feel about and parts of the country you're in and 1,000 things. It's a lot more factors than I probably give it credit for at times, but still, I mean, we're going to continue to see disparity between these two, because we're already seeing two of the Power Five go, the other three decide to stick around.
So that's the latest with college football. We'll try to connect with Josh Stahmann of the Royals here, possibly expected to have him join us right now, but we'll see if we get him on here. If not, we'll continue to work on that. The NBA bubble, thinking about like what's worked, we know that's worked. I think it just got a lot more challenging, though. So we knew this day would come eventually for the NBA bubble, which is they would start allowing family and friends into the bubble as they approach the start of the postseason. And they're going to have these play-in games starting up very soon. In fact, this weekend. Well, Woj is reporting that players will be allowed to bring in family and, quote, established longstanding personal friends into
the hell's that
the
mean?
Bubble. Oh, you know exactly what that means. You know exactly what that means. Now, there are guidelines on guests starting after the first round. 4 guests per player. It can be exceeded for your children. Guests can travel on team charters following testing, and guests will be allowed to attend games. Who's not eligible? They got very specific. Any individual the player has not previously met in person or with whom the player has had limited in-person interactions. For example, known by the player only through social media or intermediaries. Basically, nobody that slid in your DMs, no Instagram models, none of that. They're saying, we don't want, that's not going to fly.
Or the other way around, you slid into their DMs.
Yeah, sure. No sliding into DMs. Yeah.
How
are they proving that, though? If you really want to know, we hooked up 3 months ago. I know. We've met in person. It wasn't someone I just met in Orlando off of Instagram or Tinder.
Yeah, we've definitely already hooked up before. So we are long-standing friends that you can't prove. That leaves a lot up to interpretation. But with 4 people, I'm 99.9% sure they're going to be people taking some very serious advantage of this. Or having some awkward phone conversation with people they haven't called back in a few months.
Like, long-standing personal friends.
I know it's been a little while. Want to come live in the NBA bubble with me? You're probably not going to be my game ticket because they only get 2 of those. 1 adult and 1 child under 32 inches, which I think is the height requirement for the Timberwolf if you're looking for, you know.
Is that right?
Some guesstimate to go. That feels like the roller coaster height requirement for most of those things. So it's that part of it that makes me at least question how any of this is going to work, and we know for sure these athletes are going to take advantage of this. And on top of it, Serta's pointing out, he's listened to Bomani Jones on this very topic, and he was trying to point out, he's like, I don't think people realize just how many of, like, dating in a circle, essentially, people have done here, where, like, this guy dated this girl, and this girl dated him, and this, and, like,
Kardashians.
It is one messy dating situation that is getting ready to implode the NBA bubble, which I am absolutely here for. The drama involved in the NBA is awesome.
I want like a Big Brother style, all access type of subscription that I can purchase for this bubble because the entertainment would be amazing. $9.99, $19.99, I'm probably paying it. 24/7, there's just cameras in the hallways of the hotel, just in lobbies and everything. It's just Big Brother. It'd be amazing. You're telling me you wouldn't watch? The drama is going to be incredible. The basketball games have been fantastic. Last night was great. Portland, Dame dropping 61, and then now we get to add this to the mix. Yeah, their bubble's about to be tested in a big, big way.
Yeah, I don't understand how they're going to verify relationship
status.
Someone's
going to Photoshop themselves together from like a couple years ago in Vail or something.
But yeah, it's an issue with there's a lot of NBA players who have dated a lot of the same women, or there's going to be guys who... I just started dating this girl a couple of months ago or whatever, and she gets denied, but then everybody's going to have their wives there and their girlfriends and stuff, and so that guy's going to get mad because he's going to be like, why isn't my girlfriend here? I've been locked here at Disney World for months. I got needs. What's going on?
Oh, there's going to be some relationships just absolutely ruined out of this.
You don't think anyone's dumb enough to actually invite a different girl that isn't his wife to
the
bubble?
Yes, I absolutely think that's
possible. Oh, that's 100%
going to happen.
Yes.
How do you think they're not going to get caught with that?
When they're on the road in a normal season, you don't think that goes on? Why is this any different?
Because it's a little easier to be discreet in that scenario versus you're only allowed to invite 4 people. Yeah. You don't invite your wife, and then you invite other girl.
Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen for some of these guys.
Yeah, there's going to be guys who were... Hey, just, you know, I just don't feel safe. Kids here.
I don't want
like,
you here.
Just stay home.
Please.
I'll be back in a couple of months. I promise. Maybe we'll get eliminated early. I'll be there. I promise. And then somebody's gonna report that he got denied trying to bring his girlfriend in or something.
Yeah. Oh, there will absolutely be some drama that comes from this because
you know the way out of that is to be like invite your longstanding actual friend and be like, no, this girl's also like been a long friend and it's supposedly related to that guy, not, you know, you. Dude, there's a guy, I'd like to think that nobody's that dumb.
Oh, it's
that comes with way too great of a risk if you're trying to get away with it. You're never going to get away with it.
I feel like though, like the established longstanding personal friends is going to become like a new, a new term that people joke around and say like, yeah, this is actually, you wake up, you've got roommates or whatever. whether it's in college or after college, if you live with roommates, like Serta's got a roommate. He lives in like in some there's some girl from overnight stays the night.
You technically have roommates. They're just your parents currently.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So like if
so you probably wouldn't go through that risk.
Yeah. So, okay.
Serta's a good example. Please go on.
Yeah. Thank you for just completely.
I'm sorry
just, thank
for
you
throwing
for just
up
completely
the
derailing
whole system.
That. Yeah. Like,
please use Serta as your example.
Deal.
It was going better.
No, it's fine. It's not even that great. So, you know, basically Serta's going to wake up in the morning and that'll be the new like description. Like, yeah, this is an established longstanding partner of mine that decided to stay the night. That's going to be like the new phrase that people are just going to have to start using.
If you're an out of work graphic designer because you haven't had as much work as you've normally grown accustomed to because sports have been shut down, like our guy Bryce Wood from like Twitter, right, who does a lot of like local stuff, holler at some NBA guys. There's definitely some guys who need some Photoshop work who just need like a little bit of proof that says they're longstanding friends. They're going to like, this is us as kids.
I just don't understand how they're going to prove it, because there's going to be some single guys there that just, oh, check the DMs. Like, I got any ladies that have been hitting me up lately. And because they're just going to be like, hey, come to Orlando, spend a month and a half just hanging out with me, all expenses paid, it's covered. And they're just going to try to make that work. I don't see how the NBA is going to justify denying that if you're a single person.
Now, can you kick that person out? Because my question is, do you actually want it to be someone that is longstanding and established? Because do you want the random like DM, someone that slid in your DMs, you slid in their DMs, they come there. Do you really want to hang out with them for a month, though? You don't know them? For a month. So can you invite them in, and after a week, you're like, and then can you kick them out? Can you kick them out? That's very important here, because
yeah,
otherwise I don't know
so.
If I want
I
a complete rando.
Be...
You don't want a complete rando for a month.
I mean, that comes with problems.
Not a month. So that's why I'm wondering.
But
maybe you need
work
someone
out.
That
maybe,
you do have
maybe you'd
a...
find love.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a real relationship.
It's got to be somebody that
not?
you know a little bit.
Yeah.
It can't just be somebody that you've never met, because you could find yourself in a bad situation really fast.
Yeah. Like, yes. God, gonna, really
yeah,
bad situation.
Background
maybe
checking
a,
these people.
Maybe an ex that you still got a good relationship
not,
with.
Not that that couldn't go poorly, too, by the way. Like, I think everyone here is worried
least,
about, like, a left
yeah,
eye
if they
Andre
know,
Rison situation.
If they, know what
saying,
the, if they know what the game is, then...
Yeah, at least, yeah, they're aware, and
they
also...
know what the game
well, they're
is.
Also just aware of, like, the NBA life, and also, like, what is needed, I guess, at that point in time for the athlete to be able to still go and play the games. You don't interfere with that, but you understand why you're there, kind of thing. For both people, I think it would work out. NBA bubble about to be tested in a big, big way. Coming up next, we head into the 11 o'clock hour. Spring football, how feasible is that? And the AFC West, is it loaded at running backs? We'll get to that.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.